It is not good to run out of gas. It is not good to run out of gas with your wife in the car. It is not good to run out of gas with your wife in the car who has been years telling you that her father always said it doesn't matter which half of the gas tank you keep full, the upper half or the lower half. It is not good for you to run out of gas with your wife who told you so, and while you had your two best friends in the back seat. We were coming home from a weekend at the Dells. It was Sunday evening, and I was driving a Dodge Caravan, which are junky cars, I'm telling you. We were less than 20 miles from home. I should have stopped for gas before we left the Dells, but I thought I'd get it on the way. But then as we drove on Sunday evening, there was not many stations open as I thought there would be on the way back. And the car, meanwhile, had this wonderful feature in it which told me, in theory, how many miles to empty. And I kept checking that number against the number of miles to home. The car computer said I had 40 miles to empty. I had none. The car slowed to a halt just west of Highway G on 164. We tried calling anyone we knew, no answer. It's Sunday evening. And here's the worst part, and I was still embarrassed to this day. I made my wife walk up the ramp and ask the first house for some gas because I was too embarrassed that I ran out of gas. My perpetual punishment that the Lord gives me is every time I hear this parable, I think of that. Be prepared. The motto of the Boy Scouts and Jesus in this parable. These last several weeks, we have been given views of the kingdom of God, who's invited and who gets to take a seat. We've been told to stay awake and pay attention. You don't know when the day or the hour or the minute. Today's request is to be ready comes in the form of another parable. And we'll hear yet another parable of our role next week with the story of the stewards and the talents. What exactly are we to be prepared for? Well, most people would say that Jesus is talking about the second coming, the end of times. And this is probably true, as the early church expected that Jesus would be returning within their lifetime. Now, although it's 2,000 years later, Jesus is coming to set things right is still very much a part of our belief system. In fact, we recite it every week in our creed. We say he will come again to judge the living and the dead, and his kingdom will have no end. The odds are, however, that we will see our own end before the second coming. And also, whether it is our end or the second coming, the results for us will be the same. So when I hear this parable, I think of my end rather than the end of the world. Either way, Jesus is warning us to be prepared. And how exactly should we be prepared? Should we approach this coming with apprehension and fear? Or do we spend our lives worrying as if we are good enough for God? The church has spent many years telling us just that. But I wish to offer a little bit of different take. If Jesus wished to emphasize God's judgment, he would have used a parable involving a courtroom scene. But in today's parable, Jesus uses being prepared in the context of a wedding. Many may say of this parable, well, he just used something people were familiar with. But I think Jesus used this example on purpose and for a specific reason. Marriages were a bit different in Jesus' time than they are today. The marriage was more of a transaction, an agreement, and often within very close family relations. Family was the only real trustworthy entity, and so keeping it in the family was the norm. An ideal marriage partner would be your first cousin. And before we think poorly of that arrangement, it was the father of the bride's job to make sure the husband would be a good person, suited for his daughter, and that the families would not be in conflict. The actual wedding ceremony involved the suitor coming with his best men to the house of the bride-to-be. The suitor would make a case of why he is the best candidate, or if he already had been chosen, he would be discussing final arrangements, which may have been going on since they were young. The conversation would go on for hours. When the father was satisfied and conditions agreed to, the husband would take the bride back to his home. His best men would accompany him in case any other suitors would hasten and try to abduct the bride. The marriage feast would begin whenever they returned from the bride's house to the house of the groom. And there would be ladies in waiting to attend to the needs of the bridal party. These would often be unmarried close relatives of both the husband, bride, and the bridegroom. And then the big feast would begin, which could last for days. This taking of the bride from her father's home would constitute the marriage, the union from which this day forward would be for life. It is anticipation of that great feast that Jesus tells us to be prepared. We are to be prepared as if the next day would be a wedding day and not a trip to the courthouse. Jesus is telling us to prepare for the end, ours and everyone's, with an anticipation akin to getting ready for your feast day, not an IRS audit. What about the foolish ones, the foolish young ladies who did not prepare? They tried to work God into their expectations instead of the other way around. In our time, we'd say, I'll spend some time with you, Lord, but first I have to go to the grocery shopping, and then I have to get the oil changed. Well, they just don't get that the invitation is a chance for the joy of the kingdom here on earth to be continued later in heaven. What about God's justice? What about judgment? Well, God has perfect justice and he has perfect mercy. It would be easier if we throw ourselves in front of God. It's a lot harder to lay our hearts open before him. Now I want you to ponder this. It is God's love that we are afraid of, not his justice. So now that we know that what we're preparing for, now how should we be coming to God? Now that we acknowledge our own personal fear of loving God, what should we be doing? Well, stay tuned, because in the next couple of weeks, with the start of Advent, you will hear exactly what you should be doing. But for now, take up my challenge and look at your relationship with Jesus. Look at it honestly. See if it is not his justice that you fear, but that you fear his love.